reach all of our listeners through askanatheist.tv. The best of luck and safety on the East Coast as Irene barrels through. With me today, with me, Becky Friedman, is Mike Gillis. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good.
And Kate Farr.
I have definitely been worse. Hi, everybody. How's it going?
I think that it's going pretty well. Like I said, we've got nice shiny weather here. It's been a nice summer now that it's finally arrived, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I've been getting a lot of rollerblading in.
I may have the unpopular opinion, but I don't really like the summer.
Mike likes to wallow in the gray rain of the Seattle winters.
I do. I think that that it's too sunny out. You get easily burnt. Maybe I'm just too Irish. I think that enough sunlight, I will actually burst into flames. I don't want to sweat. I like when it's nice and gray and overcast, and it's nice and it's kind of moderate outside. I like it that way better, and that's why I live in this area. And I think only the British can appreciate our weather.
Wow, and I'm the one who hangs out with God.
Regardless of who we would hang out with, Mike, would you be allowed in the congregation of the Lord?
I still have all my working parts, yes.
Okay.
This is this week for Scripture Says What? This is basically a segment we do every week where we talk about the funny, the scary, and the just plain weird passages in our Holy Scriptures. I mean, there is some weird stuff that people have a tendency to hold these things up like they're these fountains of wisdom. But there are some scenes in these things that read like right out of a Sam Peckinpah movie. There is some weird stuff here.
This one was brought to our attention by several listeners, so we're not going to credit any one person, I think. And I think it's a personal favorite of Mike's, too, right?
Generally, any genital-related Bible passages tend to be some of my favorites. This is actually our second one. The first one we did in our first segment of Scripture Says What involved two men fighting. A woman, a wife of one of the men, grabbing another man by, I believe the King James version calls him the secrets. And the penalty, of course, for doing that in the middle of a fight is that she has her hand cut off. So we're getting back into the below the belt region of the Bible. This one comes from Deuteronomy 23:1. King James Version, which has all the fun little euphemisms in it. He that is wounded in the stones, or hath his privy member cut off, shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord.
Wow, that's some serious restrictions on who can enter into the congregation of the Lord. Now, what of those who never had stones or privy members in the first place, I'm wondering?
Well, clearly you can't be a transgender, I imagine, at least not post-op. The other thing that's kind of funny about this is that we do talk about, say, circumcision, where there is a part that you're supposed to slice off. So I have to ask it, what if the guy's hand slips and takes the whole thing off? Are you just barred now? It's just like, oh, I'm not allowed to go to church now.
I think there may be a different role for those individuals.
I don't know. I mean, what if your moil is like, Gary Busey? And
if your moil is Gary Busey, then we're living in an alternate universe. If you would like to call and talk to us about wonky moils or or King James interpretations of who can enter into the congregation of the Lord, give us a call, because Ask an Atheist, we're here for you to ask us. 253-584-1480. And here we are in Tacoma, Washington. Again, that's 253-584-1480.
You know, I would be very entertained to hear the Queen James version of the Bible someday.
I think that's just the King James, but read in a Freddie Mercury voice.
We will stone you.
Smite thee. So, what I find so funny about this, too, is that there are other passages of the Bible that actually contradict this, where at one point they tell you that if you're sinful and you're worried about this, actually making a eunuch of yourself is a good way to avoid sinning, then go for it. Slice away, brother.
Well, it may not be, you may be free from sin, but you're still not intact enough to enter into the tabernacle and the congregation of the Lord. But that is, needless to say, there are very many contradictory passages of the Bible. And if you've got one, it doesn't have to be from the Bible. It could be from any holy scripture, any book that any religious sect follows. Go ahead and shoot us an email at askanatheist.tv. There's a big red button where you can ask us a question. You can submit your favorite Bible quote and or scriptural quote to appear on our segment, Scripture Says. What?
Yeah, actually, you will get pushed ahead to the front of the line if you get a non-biblical one. There's a lot of really weird Bible stuff that we know, but it's a lot more fun to get something from the Bhagavad Gita, the Book of Mormon, the, what's another one? Dianetics. I mean, you pick your poison. There's some good stuff out there.
Yeah. One of the things that we also want to mention is that Ask an Atheist will be hosting an awesome event. This is our second time doing this. We are going to be appearing on Blog TV from September 2nd, that is this Friday, September 2nd, starting at noontime, and going until September 3rd at noon. It will be 24 hours. And our friend Kate here, who is also known in other circles as Bionic Dance, is no stranger to the Blog TV course of things, and we're going to be, you know, you can hang out and online chat with us and with the cast and crew of Ask an Atheist, friends of Ask an Atheist, and meanwhile, what are we doing this for? Is it just to hang out and look at our faces?
Well, I mean, there's vanity is always a part of these things. I can't deny that. But I think the big part of it is we got to pay for the show. It radio time costs money. We need to raise money to keep this show going. And every single time we've put this stuff out there, fans of the show have come through for us. And in fact, there's a number of fans who've come through for us very recently.
Definitely. On that note, we do want to thank our recent contributors very much. Casey McBride, who's a local. We've got Frank Devlin in San Diego. And David Work, who's a friend of the show and who appeared last week. Who else have we got?
Margaret King. We also have Scott Leopold, our good friend. He's hosted a couple times. Bloodfish. He's, I believe, given enough blood to the Puget Sound Blood Center to probably keep about 5 vampires set for a while.
Indeed. And he recently, we want to congratulate Scott on a very successful swim across Lake Washington in Seattle to raise money for the Puget Sound Blood Center. Scott is an amazing human being, amazing atheist, and an amazing charitable worker. And Kate, who's our last contributor that we wanted to thank today?
Well, we also have Wendy Swanson of Auburn Freethought.
Thank you very much, Wendy. And we had an excellent time meeting up last week after our show with the Auburn Freethought Society, and we appreciated that very much.
And incidentally, these Blog TV events, the one we're about to host, are a lot of fun. I myself just did one for an HIV/AIDS charity event, and my hour was a blast, raised about $400. And yeah, so the one for Ask an Atheist is going to be just as fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun the last time we did this. 24 hours, noon to noon, you get to see us in our self, you know, sleep-deprived, whatever state, where we're just having fun. I don't think we talk about atheism that much during the course of the show. I think that Sam and I spent an hour talking about Doctor Who at one point.
Indeed, indeed. And I don't know, we have a sleepover party, a slumber party in our office, so you might get to see us in our jammies and, you know, with our Coca-Colas and Monster and Rockstar drinks, trying to stay up all night, all to entertain you guys.
In a state of complete disheveledness.
So, speaking of entertainment, I came across a news article this week, guys, that I just thought was extremely entertaining and funny, and it comes to us through, let's see, The Guardian, and it is all about Tuscan friars in San Salvatore al Monte, and they had, unfortunately, a theft go on in their basilica. And it goes like this. But what? How did they respond? Well, a group of Franciscan friars, furious at the theft of Bibles from their church in Florence, have taken the unusual step of praying for their thief to be struck down by diarrhea.
Ooh.
Friars at the 15th century Church of San Salvatore al Monte, which was a favorite of Michelangelo, very interesting, they were irritated when a rare and expensive Bible disappeared from the lectern, and they flew off the handle when a replacement Bible donated by a worshiper also went missing within a few hours. And so, in response to this, they pinned a note in full view of worshipers saying they hope that the thief sees the error of his ways, but in case he does not, they add, quote, "We pray to God that the thief is struck by a strong bout of the," and here I edit, "the runs."
Yeah, I actually have a feeling that the thief will end up not giving a crap.
I'm trying to figure out how they think this will work to get that Bible back. I assume that they are just going to follow the trail back to...
Sort of a Hansel and Gretel type thing?
Yeah, It'd be unpleasant, but at least you get your Bible back.
Well, Tuscan Friars, I think it was all in good humor. I really liked it, because described by the La Stampa newspaper as, quote, the product of Tuscan ability to be ironic about anything, the note in its unorthodox request will be forgiven, claim one of the friars. And they do admit, it's not exactly clean language, but we just couldn't put up with it any longer. The Lord and the faithful will understand. Luckily, I think some of the atheists also understand a good sense of humor as well.
Well, let's just hope that these Tuscan friars don't turn into Tuscan raiders.
For all
you Star Wars fans out there.
Moving along. We have some emails, actually.
We do. Mike, we have someone named T from the internet who talked to us about a four-letter word for atheist, and actually his subject is a four-letter F word for atheist. I think this is a call back to an episode a few weeks ago where we said, you know, what is sort of this bad word? I mean, atheism sometimes can be derogatory or, you know, said in a slanderous way, but he actually came up with one that's historical.
Yeah, that's the funny thing is that every group that's marginalized in some way has a word. It's that word that when somebody yells it out in an argument that the room goes silent because they sort of expect some kind of a violent response, whether it's the N-word or the K-word or the C-word. I mean, these are words that sort of say, oh, okay, this just went to a different level. I think somebody might get punched. And for all the talk, atheists don't seem to have this kind of a word. As widespread as the prejudice against us is, we just don't have it because we have a tendency to just embrace these things and then just wear them proudly, like heathen or whatever.
Indeed. So T tells us that he was listening to the podcast from June called Gaytheism, and one subject that came up was, is there a derogatory term for atheism akin to using the N-word towards black people that causes atheists' hackles to rise in indignation? And on the show, none of us could come up with a term, and he or she suspects that someone has probably already brought this to our attention. But T, we want to say, hey, thanks. This is the first time that it's been brought to our attention. T cites actually in Psalm 14, verse 1, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt, their deeds are vile, and there is no one who does good. And T really was offended by this in two senses. Kate, what does he say for the first sense of that?
Oh, well, the first is that Christians often use it in the context of saying that we're too foolish, as in the lack of intelligence or wisdom to understand and therefore accept the tenets of their religion as true. And personally, I don't see that as relevant whatsoever, but, I mean, it takes a fool to believe it, not to disbelieve it.
Yeah, I don't really find that offensive. Wow, the people who believe in a talking snake and giants and unicorns and a guy who comes back from the dead and the world being made and a man being made out of dirt in the first day. If that guy thinks I'm foolish, you know, whatever. I really don't care. I think that he's really living in a glass house there.
Something that's a little bit more insidious, though, in T's offense that he's noticed. It says, you know, when one reads the whole quote and not just that first line, it calls into question our, meaning atheists or non-believers, morality and implies that we're actually evil. Again, it says, these fools, they are corrupt, their deeds are vile, and there's no one who does good. Well, we certainly know that that is not the case. We have our own Scott Leopold, who raises lots of money for Puget Sound Blood Center and donates his own blood. We have atheists all over the Puget Sound who gather usually every other month to donate blood, and all kinds of charity that goes on.
Yeah, one thing I find offensive about it, one is that this is the one that gets used against us more than anything, that we're somehow incapable of being moral. And to really understand how widespread prejudice against atheists is, I'm not going to try to compare it or play the oppression Olympics with any other marginalized group. I certainly think that prejudice against gays and lesbians is more strident, much more visceral, much more intense than prejudice against atheists, but I think prejudice against atheists is more widespread, and it comes out of the mouths of even very liberal people, and I think this has nothing to do with any specific thing where we're much worse, but I think it's just the work of the gay rights movement to change people's minds over like 20 to 30 years.
And I think there's a lot of civil rights movements and activist movements that have, you know, striven really well to sort of pave the way for all sorts of minority groups.
Well, it does seem to be largely taken for granted by the religious that atheists are immoral and evil in that way. There doesn't seem to be anything to actually justify it. There's no facts behind it. But if I personally had to come up with a four-letter F word to describe atheists, I'd come up. I'd say free.
Yeah, the thing that gets me with this is that I'm not really offended. Let's just say I'm a big fan of Pepsi or whatever, and somebody who's a big fan of Coke says, "Oh, well, you're just horrible because it says here in the book of Coke that Pepsi is horrible and it's this and that." Well, of course it would say that because that book is selling Coke. Why wouldn't it say that? This is the number one sales pitch. I'm not surprised. I'm not offended. The same way that, hey, guess what? The Democratic platform says the Republicans are bad and vice versa. This is not surprising. Why do you expect somebody who's not part of that group to immediately assume that this book is inerrant truth?
Well, those are both great points. The bias of the book itself, and certainly the reclaiming of a four-letter word for atheist free. We've got another email from Erica from Utah on divine punishment. She says that she was driving home late one day and stumbled across a Christian broadcast of a preacher talking about divine punishment. And atheists often say that we can't understand a God that would purposely harm his children. Erica says, I myself have said this, and while I can think of a few reasons people would turn to the idea of divine punishment rather than reality, I'd like to hear your take on it.
Well, it's often taken for granted that God is necessarily good. And if there is a God, we don't have any guarantee of that. God could be a complete jerk.
Yeah, I think this is one of those funny things that comes out of the mouths of religious people when something bad happens. And we just happen to have had two really bad things happen on the East Coast. But there's been Hurricane Irene, and there's also been this big earthquake. And it's amazing how quickly, out of the mouths of these religious people, they immediately start not only acting as like it's a good thing that these earthquakes are happening, that God made it happen, and this is punishment for like same-sex marriage in New York, or Tony and Craig being allowed to hold hands in public.
One of my personal favorites from a non-Christian friend of ours said, "Oh, it was punishment for Rick Perry's prayer of water that we get a
Hurricane Irene." Yeah, he was asking for water, and it's like, okay, we'll drown you.
So. Well, if you have something to say about that, call us at 253-584-1480. Mike, Becky, and Kate will be back in a little bit after a word from a few of our friends.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. We're here in Tacoma, Washington, till the top of the hour, 253. 844-1480. Give us a call. Ask us. You got three atheists, Mike, Becky, and Kate here, waiting to hear from you. We do, in the meantime, have one more email that we're going to look at today from David. His location, he's emailing us from Rich Lyon's sock drawer. Thank you. I'm not sure that Rich is aware that there is David R. Living in his sock drawer. And we do want to thank David for helping with a new test email form at asknatheist.tv. But David asks us, if a U.S. culture became mostly secular, what effects do you think it'd have on society at large? Mike? Kate?
Well, I think that the big one would be there would be a number of really stupid fights we would no longer have to have.
Oh, absolutely.
Like in a presidential election, we'd no longer have candidates in a primary arguing over who hates evolution the most. I would say the anti-gay rights movement would completely dry and shrivel up, because when you really get down to it, and this is something we threw out there months ago, that when you really dig down under all the pseudoscience, all the BS, all the equivocations, all the rationalizations that anti-gay rights advocates toss out there, at the bottom of that barrel is almost always religion. They always get into, well, this is the way God made us. This is God's law. And you take that out of the way, and I think there'd be a lot of fights about science curriculum, a lot of fights about social studies curriculum we wouldn't be having.
Yeah, and abortion. A lot of the objections to abortion would probably go away as well. I mean, if we don't have an immortal soul, then all that there is a collection of cells that are becoming a human rather than actually being one.
And to be fair, there are atheists that do have differing opinions on abortion that are not sectarian-based or religiously-based. Are there any other things? Do you think that some of the ethnic strife that goes on in the U.S. or socioeconomic differences that go on in the U.S. would be affected by a secular culture?
Well, I think that we'd have to prioritize things that actually have demonstrable effects, both positive and negative. When we talk about economics, we're not talking about God wants this, God wants that. And I think politicians of every stripe have a tendency to use God as a cover for their moral character, if you know what I mean. That instead of having to prove that they're no longer a philandering D-bag, that instead they just have to show themselves in front of a church talking about how they found God, how they found this. I mean, there are several instances, and this is one we've talked about before, where a governor might give somebody clemency because they found Jesus. And this is part of the Christian doctrine, that you get this complete tabula rasa. You get this clean slate as soon as you fall down and apologize, not even to the person you wronged, not to the person you did something wrong to. You don't have to spend years proving that you're not a lying, murdering rapist anymore. You have to just say, hey, I'm sorry to this imaginary person. You don't even have to say it out loud, and you let that person free. And in the case of Lakewood and somebody like Maurice Clemens, somebody goes on to murder four more cops. But, oh, he found Jesus, so I guess that was a big mistake.
Very provocative indeed, and so you know, there could be times where merely appearing to accept Jesus into your heart, or appear in front of a church, or go to services on a weekly basis can sort of mask you know, lack of other evidence and deeds to stand in for moral integrity. Kate, do you agree?
Oh, sure. And there'd also be a lot of uptightedness just culturally that I think would go away. I mean, religious people seem to have certain expectations for how we're supposed to look, how we're supposed to dress, how we're supposed to behave. And I'm not saying that if religion were to go away, we'd all be jerks to each other. Of course not. But there are a lot of ways in which we hold ourselves back that we wouldn't have to, that harm nobody, but which religious people tend to object to anyway.
Yeah, it contributes to this kind of culture of shame that is built up. I would like to live in a more secular society where religion and politics and religion and this sort of punitive culture, I think, that Kate is talking about, this idea that you can shame somebody into that. And if you really want to look at what a civil rights movement really is, it's getting rid of that power that somebody in power has to shame you into silence. And that this is why a lot of times religious people, especially in politics, especially in the public square, people like Pat Robertson or people like Michelle Bachmann, people who you scream a lot and try to affect social policy specifically because of their religious beliefs, always act as if they're somehow being victimized if other people are allowed to talk without being punished or fined or shamed into silence.
Well, that's definitely very interesting. Now, Mike, this leads us very nicely into the topic that you bring to us today about tolerance. Do you think that in a secular society that we would have an increase in tolerance, and would there be a decrease in sort of religious-based or non or sectarian-based intolerance towards individuals and towards group of people?
Well, I think you have to get into the definition of secular, and this is something that I don't think a lot of religious people get, that they really miss this point. That I've heard a religious person once say that if it's not explicitly Christian, that it's secular. So driver's ed is an atheistic thing. Secular basically means a neutral position. It means it's not going to get involved in the issue of religion at all. The United States is a secular country. It may have a Christian majority, but it's not a Christian country. We don't have it written into our Constitution the same way that right now we're majority white, but we're not a white nation. We're a nation that belongs to everybody. And as a consequence of such, we don't. I think the more secular it gets, we would become more tolerant, because secularism is tolerance. So I think when we have to get into this definition of tolerance, let's actually talk about what is tolerance.
Yeah, tell us. What's sort of your view of tolerance?
Well, I think this is a question we get thrown at us a lot, because atheists, especially activist atheists, atheists that are part of a visibility movement, we're accused of being intolerant all the time. Usually it's because we don't always treat other people's beliefs with the respect that they think those beliefs are deserving of. And let's start with this. This is admission time. Let's just put this out on the table. We're not tolerant of other people's ideas and beliefs, and no one else is either. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Liberals don't respect the political beliefs of the Tea Party, and the Tea Party doesn't return a favor on that. They don't respect their beliefs either. Moderate religious folks don't respect the religious beliefs of fundamentalists like Pat Robertson or Ray Comfort, and vice versa. Red Sox fans and Yankees fans don't respect the other guy's fandom.
Hey, you know, I might have a little bit of issue with that, having been grown up and indoctrinated into the Bostonian Red Sox fandom, but I think I can respect a Yankees fans, a New Yorker's right to root for their home team, but yeah, certainly I wouldn't really...
And that's totally reasonable. That's the key word, though, Becky, is right. Is that I think it's totally reasonable to demand a right to speak and express your own views, no matter how unpopular they are or how much they might, you know, make somebody angry. That right, that's that thing, demanding that right. It's reasonable to demand that somebody is not going to be jailed or fined because they're wearing a Yankees jersey, or to give them fewer rights. It's not like if you're go into New York City and you're wearing a Boston jersey, that the cops can take you aside and harass you. Or have some kind of, like, if there's, like, a Boston Red Sox bar and the cops can come in and give you some sort of, like, stonewall beating. That stuff just doesn't happen. And it's reasonable to ask that doesn't happen.
Definitely. Now, if you have been a Red Sox fan or a Yankees fan or a religious believer or a religious non-believer, and you've experienced some kind of intolerance or tolerance that may be unwarranted in Mike's view, give us a call at 253-584-1480. We're here to talk to you, and we'd love to hear from you.
Now, it is important to remember, of course, that tolerance is not necessarily the same thing as being immune from criticism.
That's a big part of it. That's actually the biggest part of it. I think it's reasonable to say, I'm not going to get fewer rights than you because I'm part of this group, or I'm not going to be jailed for this view. What's unreasonable, what you should not be able to expect from somebody else, is that they have to treat your beliefs with the same respect you do. Because let's face it, you don't respect his beliefs, and that's fine. You know, I have no problem saying that David Icke, who is this conspiracy guy who believes that the world is secretly controlled by shape-shifting lizard men, that guy has stupid beliefs. They're not based on evidence, and they're just plain goofy. I have no problem saying that Rick Perry, the presidential candidate, who doesn't believe that global warming is real, and he thinks the world was created 6 days by a magic man, I have no problem saying that is a stupid belief. And I don't have any problem with him saying that my beliefs are stupid. What he doesn't...
So are you intolerant, then, of these beliefs?
No, I'm not intolerant of his right to that belief. And I think that's the important part. I'm not going to say Rick Perry should be thrown in jail or David Icke should be fined because he believes something that's stupid. He just doesn't have the right to live in a little bubble where he's not free, you know, he's free from criticism.
Well, one of my favorite sayings is that your right to swing your fist ends at the tip of my nose. If your religion is getting in the way of my life, if you're causing me harm by your religion, that's where I start to get pretty darn intolerant. And so if you're going to fight with me about that, well, that's something that we're going to have to settle.
Okay, now here's something I want to throw out to you guys and our listener. You can call in about this, 253-584-1480. Something I came across by blogger David Nichtern, who's a senior Shambhala Buddhist teacher. He has three levels or variants of tolerance, and I wanted to know if they seem very ecumenical and very tolerant of all religious believers, but I wanted to know where atheists fit into this. Well, his first sort of definition or variant of tolerance that sometimes we see is, I believe that my way is right, but I also acknowledge that others have different beliefs, and therefore I will acknowledge their right to hold those beliefs, and out of a sense of decorum, I will not denigrate, at least in public, their beliefs. Now, it seems like that's sort of in line with what we're saying, except for that, out of a sense of decorum, I will not denigrate their beliefs. Now, do you think that that's necessary to have public discourse and decorum and a civil society?
No, I really don't. I see nothing wrong with denigrating somebody's beliefs, because sometimes they need to be denigrated, because sometimes their beliefs put into action harm people.
Kate, have you come across a harmful belief that was worthy of denigration?
Oh, absolutely. Many, many of them. I mean, ones that just say, I'm not allowed to live my own life my way. You know, I mean, heck, I'm a lesbian. Gay marriage is a biggie on this one. I mean, there are people out there who will say that that is completely against what anyone should ever do. And I'm causing nobody any harm at all. So their decision to tell me that I'm completely wrong, I'm sorry, that's chowder-headed.
It is stupid, and I think that's a big part, is that what we're seeing happen a lot is that Christians in this country, at least, have had this cultural dominance for so long that they've been able to just make these decisions, and when they mention the Bible and they drop that as some kind of, like, conversation ender, like, oh, it's over, Hogan just dropped the leg drop, conversation done. No, there's going to be a response to this, and other people are allowed to say, no, your belief is not the default law of this country.
What?
And when somebody is allowed to not have to do what you say, you are not being persecuted.
I've actually encountered Christians who are convinced that God belief is the default. I mean, you want to talk about the dominance they've had for so long. They actually think that you have to become an atheist rather than learn to become religious. But nobody's born with religious knowledge. You have to be taught that just like everything else.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But that's a big part of Christian privilege we've talked about before, which is default status. That why is it that a fiction story about a white male character is supposed to be for everybody, but if it's about a black female character, that's a story for black females, that kind of idea. The idea that somebody is just sort of the default status. Oh, Christian, you can throw that out there. That's not sectarian at all. But again, getting back to this question of are we tolerant? There's a lot of well-meaning folks out there that trot out the line that the atheist activist, the skeptic, pointing out weaknesses or poor evidence or the harm done by somebody else's supernatural beliefs, they should just get off their high horses and admit they're intolerant, too, of beliefs. And it's fine. Intolerant of beliefs is fine. Intolerance of people and their right to them is not.
Now, is that so often? I mean, it seems to me that it would be so often a difficult position to criticize someone's belief, because people can link their identity so intensely with that kind of belief.
This is true. They can do that, but in the end, there's a difference between somebody's identity, like, say, for instance, somebody's ethnicity or somebody's sexual orientation, something that is completely separate from, and I mean, this is what they would be no matter where they were born, no matter how they were brought up. This is going to be a core part of them, the same way as your hair color, your eye color, or anything else. But when it comes to your ideas, ideas don't have that. Ideas have to live on their own merit.
Well, and the truth is that, I mean, I don't know about them, but if I'm wrong, I want to know it so I can correct myself, so I can be correct, so I can be right about the world and have an accurate picture of it. But apparently some of these religious folks are not there. They think, this is what I believe, this is what is true, and if facts contradict it, well, then that's just too bad. The facts don't win.
I think that's an interesting point, Kate. And back to our blogger, the Buddhist teacher, the highest level of tolerance that he espouses as the best or as the most ideal is where one says, I have a strong connection with my beliefs, but I completely respect the facts that others may hold, the fact that others may hold other beliefs of equal, of potentially equal or perhaps even superior validity, and I remain humble and open and am willing to explore, compare, or even yield when presented with new ideas outside my belief system. I think that what, Kate, you're highlighting is that for an atheist that holds that, that is not mutually exclusive with having others' ideas be open to criticism, and that yielding to other ideas outside of our own belief system is those ideas that are based on, what is it? Evidence.
Evidence, yeah, and not holding ideas dogmatically. And sometimes when it sounds like an atheist is just dismissing something, like, oh, that's dumb, we have given it a lot of thought. It's just that frequently we hear a lot of the same arguments over and over and over again, and occasionally they slap a new coat of paint on it, but it's largely just the same thing. And again, I'm not fighting for somebody else's ability to live in a bubble and never have their ideas criticized. I'm fighting for them not to be jailed or fined or given unequal rights because of having those beliefs. Beliefs are not inherently worthy of respect. They're not. They earn it based on the merits of their ideas. And let's face it, challenging bad ideas and having our own bad ideas challenged is the only way to make bad ideas better. And, I mean, this is what discourse is. This is what debate is. This is what we'd like to see politicians do, instead of arguing dogmatically, saying, okay, here is a shared foundation of fact and evidence, and we can interpret it differently and have different opinions about how we're going to handle this problem. But, you know, just saying that, oh, I believe this really, really strongly, and I connect it to my sense of personal identity means you can never criticize it, and I can throw my elbows around, but you can't throw elbows at me, that I'm hypersensitive, but I'm not hypersensitive about anyone else's feelings, is that we sort of have to recognize that in a free society where people are allowed to talk, you are going to hurt people's feelings and people are going to hurt yours. You don't have a right to not have your feelings hurt.
Okay. Here's something I want to throw at you guys. We have this word tolerance, and I'm wondering whether we should merely just tolerate someone's right, or whether there's a sort of more beyond tolerance, something like we should embrace people's rights to have beliefs and explore those beliefs. Is tolerance enough?
I'm not sure I see the difference.
I don't either. I mean, there are some beliefs. I will support somebody's right to be a totalitarian, that they may worship Kim Jong-il, but I have no problem saying that Kim Jong-il's ideas are harmful, that the way he runs a country hurts people and just aggrandizes his own sense of vanity.
I'm willing to tolerate someone's beliefs, but not their behavior necessarily.
Excellent. If you have been called intolerant or experienced religious intolerance, give us a call today, 253-584-1480 at Ask an Atheist.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Join us after today's show at the Office Bar and Grill in downtown Tacoma. Offering a wide selection of tap and bottled beer, a full bar of your favorite liquor, and a taste bud tantalizing menu, come on down and shoot the breeze with the Ask an Atheist crew. Who can argue with your motives? After all, you're at the office. The Office Bar and Grill is at 813 Pacific Avenue in Tacoma.
Welcome back to Ask an an Atheist. We're here taking your calls till the top of the hour at 253-584-1480. Today, we are talking about tolerance. Religious tolerance, religious intolerance. Can we be tolerant of ideas? Do we have to be tolerant of ideas? Or can we merely just support your right to have those ideas and explore those ideas? We actually have an email from Kayla from Connecticut that talks a little bit or speaks a little bit to this. Kayla is a 17-year-old, so we definitely welcome our youth listeners to email us in at askanatheist.tv. Thanks, Kayla. Kayla says the reason she wanted to contact us was that in the first show that she listened to, it was mentioned that more Christian parents would want their kids dating a Muslim than an atheist, and she's had this experience. She writes, "My ex-boyfriend is a Christian and I'm an atheist. Though I didn't mind that he believes in something and I don't, it did bother his family. Though we stopped seeing each other for unrelated reasons, I recently found out his parents didn't want him dating me because of my religious beliefs," or Kayla, I might say your lack of religious beliefs. "At first I was surprised," she writes, "why does it matter what I believe? I do not agree with their beliefs either, but that shouldn't affect a relationship. Religion is not a quality which determines whether or not one should be with a person. Though I would prefer to be with someone whose parents believe I'll go to hell for disagreeing with them. Especially because being aware of and being able to comprehend and respect another person's perspective, whether you agree with them or not, helps you become a more understanding and well-rounded person."
Yeah, I have kind of a weird take on tolerance. I guess against the usual liberal ecumenicalism, everyone has some different part of the truth sort of thing. There are people that I wouldn't date because of their beliefs. So I can't completely say that you shouldn't not date somebody because of their beliefs. I would have a hard time respecting and dating a young Earth creationist, for instance.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that one. I mean, there are some people who believe things that would make it very difficult to maintain a relationship simply because there'd be expectations or just worldviews that would totally get in the way, where you'd be thinking one thing, they're thinking another, your behavior just would not match.
Yeah, I think that the thing with being in a relationship is that this is the person you can be completely unguarded with, that if you're just frustrated about something, you should be able to rant a little bit, and nobody takes it, you know, really seriously, or at least knows that you're frustrated. And if I got really angry about Pat Robertson and the person I dated absolutely loved him and worshiped the ground he walked on, then I would have a really hard time being unguarded, and so would she.
But there are some beliefs that don't get in the way at all. I mean, I once dated a girl who was into some sort of pagan witchcrafty type stuff, and aside from her occasionally doing what they call sky-clad rituals, it never got in the way at all. And so there are some forms of belief that are okay.
So in this case, in Kayla's case, were the parents of her boyfriend being intolerant towards her or needlessly intolerant while maybe Kayla was being very tolerant of her boyfriend at the time and respecting his right to hold the beliefs and respecting the right of his parents to hold the Christian beliefs?
I figured that as far as this goes, this is the thing that is up to the two people in the relationship. And if you don't have a problem with it and you can move past it and you're happy, go for it. This is a place where someone might go, "Oh, Mike, you're being a total hypocrite." I do think the parents are being intolerant, and not necessarily because they have a problem with atheism or with skepticism or a materialistic worldview or humanism or something. That's perfectly fine. If you have a problem with a belief, that's cool. But when you start making blanket statements about an entire class of people, whether we're talking about, oh, all people who are Christian are bad, all people who are Muslim are bad, everyone, you know, that sort of thing, that is kind of persecution. You're saying this entire class of people is less good than somebody else.
And that's no longer at that point just mere intolerance. That really leads to bigotry.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is bigotry really comes from limiting those rights to saying that somebody's less than?
Yeah, if you're being bigoted towards somebody, it's not just making intolerant statements, but it's also saying things like, well, because of their beliefs, these people should be treated differently in this way. I hesitate to say persecuted, but it's a close cousin.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the blanket statement that, you know, condemnations of a worldview, that's fine. You can say that I don't like communism, I don't like libertarianism, I don't like Islam, Christianity, conspiracy theory, whatever. Those are belief systems or beliefs. But when you start saying, oh, God, I hate all Christians, oh, I hate all Muslims, and I think that them as a class should be treated differently because of that, not on a specific belief they have. Like, I will criticize that belief, and that's fine. But the problem that I see from people, a lot of people, like, say, Billy Graham is a bigot, that he will make statements about all atheists. Again, we're getting back to that question of we're all fools and we're incapable of doing good. That's bigotry. The same way you'd say all black people are bad and incapable of doing good. Because we've come to a cultural place where racism has been very well marginalized, not eradicated, but very well marginalized, that we immediately feel the bigotry in that statement. We're not yet there with atheists.
Or at least overt racism, one might say. We know that there's a lot of nuanced, institutionalized, and internalized racism that still is affecting a lot of people within our U.S. And North American culture and other parts of the world, too.
Oh, absolutely.
So I, as an educator, have read a lot of research about students with you know, of diversity, and I've done a lot of work in cultural competency as an educator. And one of the things that comes up is that when a student is in a culture where an identifying part of their personhood or personality or identity, be it physical or cultural or sociological, is sort of marginalized to the point of intolerance, then it can have really detrimental effects on that student. That's also been expanded into, you know, adults, when you have communities of people that are marginalized, you know, and victims of intolerance and bigotry, it can have a really, really difficult effect on the success of that person and that group. How can we sort of perpetuate and this the idea that ideas and beliefs are okay for criticism, and we can be intolerant of beliefs, but not have that be distinct and separate from a person. And sort of mitigate some of these negative effects.
Well, if I was to give the example of Islam, I would say that it's okay to look at the Quran and talk about the horrible, brutal stuff in there, but also to recognize that the big victims of Islam are Muslims. They're the people who live under this and are victimized by this. At the same time, what you should do is when you meet a Muslim, by not to judge them by every single thing in that book. And if there's one thing that we've recognized over the course of this show, is that people are almost always better than their holy book, even the fundamentalists. Those, you know, Pat Robertson isn't telling people to kill disobedient children, even though the book does. The book is really, really awful, but people are generally better than them. And I would say the same of any religious group. So I'm not going to judge every Muslim by Al-Qaeda. I'm not going to judge every Christian by the Houthari or by abortion clinic bombers, and I don't think it's fair to do that. Not to take the worldview criticism and apply that to every single person in that group individually. I'm not judging everyone at once. I'm judging a book. Okay, if I'm making a condemnation of communism and talking about Marx's book, I'm not talking about every communist.
Well, at the same time, I mean, it's not just us as atheists being tolerant of the religious, but also the religious being tolerant of us. I mean, there are definitely communities. Thankfully, Washington State doesn't seem to be one of them, or at least not the Seattle area. But there are parts of this country where atheists are treated really, really badly, almost as if they are devil worshippers rather than just non-believers. And it seems to me that because of the dominance of religion that we discussed earlier, it seems that being passive is not the way to go, that we may actually ultimately have to have what I want to say a fight about this, but it may just be an argument, thankfully, not a physical confrontation. But it does seem as though atheists have to get more active and say, look, we're not bad people. It's okay to tolerate us. We're not going to make your lives worse by our existence.
Have you had some experience in that? Give us a call at 253-584-1480. You know, this kind of reminds me of something that atheist and feminist blogger and past guest on Ask an Atheist, Greta Christina, had, that a while ago, she had said in one of her talks to the Seattle Atheists that it's really important to separate the beliefs from the person, to say, hey, religion or religious belief is one way, is a hypothesis about how the world works, but it's not who you are necessarily, and it doesn't have to be who you are. And we can love you, and we can respect you, and we can get along with you, and we can date you, or we can not date you. We can work with you, we can not work with you. We can babysit your children, but we can still criticize those ideas and sort of helping people to see that just because you hold a belief, it's not necessarily your identity. It doesn't have to be.
Well, and goodness knows that because atheism is really the lack of a belief, it doesn't come with dogma, it doesn't come with expected behaviors. Being an atheist is really a very, very passive thing. You just go about your life. It's one aspect of you. It's not a tradition. It's not you don't go to a building, it's not part of your identity very much. It's really just, I'm without this other aspect that so many of the rest of you have.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing a lot of people don't get, is like, oh, if you don't believe in any of this, this is such a passive thing, why do you have a radio show? Why are you putting up billboards? Well, it's because of the behavior of other people. Because when we don't speak up for ourselves, other people are happy to talk about us on our behalf.
Right. If it weren't for the religious people and their behavior, atheists would have no reason to congregate at all.
Yeah, and again, the conflict of ideas is a good thing. People should share their beliefs. If you're a Mormon missionary, yeah, go on your little, short sleeve shirt and tie, walk through my neighborhood and spread your beliefs. Don't expect, though, that I have to treat them as much as respect as you do. I'm not going to, outright be a jerk to you, but I'm going to challenge you, and you should try to challenge me, because this is how bad ideas get better. It doesn't mean... Religious freedom doesn't mean that you get to basically have your beliefs completely have this little weird criticism force field around them. And it's funny how there is this double standard for religion. Why is it that with politics and everything else, back and forth rhetoric, arguments, debates, picking apart the weaknesses and strengths of arguments, why is that the norm, and why isn't that the norm for religion?
It is very curious, and I do want to come back to that sort of ecumenical view that a lot of liberal religious folks will have, that we don't judge, we suspend judgment of the beliefs because all beliefs are worthy of respect. I think that the take-home message, Mike and Kate, that you're trying to tell us is that not all beliefs are worthy of respect, all people are worthy of respect, and all people are worthy of tolerance, and all people's rights are worthy, the right to have the belief.
Absolutely. Arguments are good.
So you, Mike, as an atheist, will not suspend judgment on a belief. You will not, for the sake of decorum, Kate, refrain from denigrating an obviously false or harmful belief.
That's
Is that the
true.
Case?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I think I can at least a little bit answer the question of why religion seems to have this force field around it, and that's because faith is so central to religious belief that you have to believe without proof, you have to believe without evidence, that argument is just simply not allowed because you have to spend so much of your time just plain believing. And any argument can knock that down. It's a house of cards. It's very delicate.
Yeah, and I think what it really gets down to is, I don't care if the Mormon church down the street has the right to think that ancient Jews sailed to America and they were the ancestors of the Aztecs and the Native Americans. But when someone says that sort of stupid thing publicly, they should expect a response. The same way when you say a political thing, that's dumb. You don't get my silence. I'm not going to treat your bad idea with respect. And if I say something dumb, please point it out, because that's the only way that it'll ever get fixed.
That's a really provocative statement, and I think that it's really neat, and it kind of brings us back to back full circle to those beliefs and that issue of tolerance.
Yeah, and again, when we talk about tolerance, also we have to realize that there are things that are publicly owned, publicly created, things like government, things where, this belongs to everyone, so government doesn't have a right to have political or religious beliefs the same way that, say, a church would or something like that. So, hey, looks like we might actually have a phone call.
We do have a phone call from Zishan in Louisiana, and Zishan wants to talk about Islam or being Muslim. Zishan, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Zishan.
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to ask, every time I discuss with an atheist about, the Quran, basically, they always associate it with the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, and stories from there. When you look at the Quran, without any outside influence, but when you look at the Quran, you see that the stories aren't the same. And the stories aren't, I mean, exactly the way they are in the Bible.
I would say that they're not exactly the same, but they're telling of the same story. It's sort of like how you can have the story of Cinderella told through many different lenses and many different cultures, that not everything is going to be a glass slipper and a ballroom. Sometimes it might be a coach turning into, generated not from a pumpkin, but from something else. But the same storyline is definitely there. Kate?
Well, and as I understand it, all three of the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, are technically speaking about the same God. They're all derived from the same source. So that's why people might equate them.
Ishan, does that answer your question a little bit?
That does answer a little bit. Like, for example, the Quran doesn't talk about a worldwide flood in regards to Noah. It talks about a flood, but not a worldwide flood. The Bible, on the other hand, talks about a worldwide flood.
And there are flood stories that are pretty much universal to many, many cultures around the world.
Yes. And I guess for me, I get down to the end of it, which is there any evidence for any of this stuff? I don't really think in terms of, oh, well, I'm going to nitpick over this versus that. Does Spider-Man have organic web shooters? Does he have... that's just nothing to me. I at the end, is there any proof? And I don't see it for any of these books. Sorry,
well,
Zeeshan.
Yeah, and thank you, Zeeshan, for your call. We're going to move now to 13 heathens from Texas talking about tolerance. We've got about 2 more minutes.
Well, this is going to be fairly brief. I did a series talking about Scientology was challenged to do so a while back, and in with their beliefs is that anyone that's low on what they refer to as their tone scale should be removed from society. This includes people with arthritis and people with low self-esteem and all this. Yet, when I was critical of this viewpoint, I was called a bigot.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with calling somebody's viewpoint out. Like, if I take the viewpoint that everyone who is left-handed should be thrown in prison, there's, you know, you're actually talking about being removed from society. That's also taking it into the politics frame. That's bigotry.
Well, and it's fair to remember that a lot of religious people have a hair trigger. A lot of them like to scream bigotry when all they're getting is criticism. It seems to be part of the culture.
And again, that's separating the idea from the person. And certainly, if you're attacking a person just for a physical deformity or an illness, that, I think, would be the height of bigotry.
What I thought was interesting, though, is the same people that were cheering me on while I was working on this video series, these people turned on me the moment I started talking about their beliefs.
Yeah, that's always the way it works, is that everyone is tolerant of the things they're tolerant of, and they're intolerant of those other ones, and until they get it pulled on them, they're like, oh, wait, now that's mean. Those guys are all false, but I'm true.
Well, and it's important to remember that a lot of these religions are based largely on persecution anyway. I mean, just think about Jesus being crucified.
And thank you so much, 13 Heathens, from your call. We are at the end of our hour. I've been Becky Friedman, your host for the hour. I've had Mike Gillis and Kate Farr with me. Thank you so much. This has been a production of NEDM Media. Remember to tune in noontime Friday, September 2nd, through noontime Saturday, September 3rd, for our blog TV event. You can always reach us at askanatheist.tv. Our music is always by Chris Cullman, our production assistant today. With Sam Mulvey, and our call screener was Darren Garvin. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week at Ask an Atheist.